May I speak to you in the name of God, who meets us in wonder, in love, and in praise. Amen. So everyone relax and breathe. It's still Advent. Advent is a season of anticipatory joy. To me, it is always the season of wonder. We don't quite know, but we almost know, and we wonder, and we wonder. Sometimes I think love and praise get more play and attention in the church than wonder. But wonder often comes first. It's an odd blend of fear and adoration, confusion and curiosity. Wonder is how we grow and discover. Children are natural and expert wanderers. So are we if we let it happen, and God meets us in our wondering. In those days, it came to pass, and they wondered, how can this be? In these days, it comes to pass, and we wonder, how can this be? In those days was roughly 4 to 5 before Christ BCE. Elizabeth and her husband, the temple priest Zechariah, had no children. In those days, barrenness was attributed to the woman and was considered shameful. In these days, that still happens in some places. Zechariah, in prayer, had an angelic vision informing him that Elizabeth would become pregnant in her old age. And he says, how can I know this is so? How can this be? How can this be? And Elizabeth later wonders the same. How can this be? And when Mary comes to visit, the child leaps in her womb. How can this be? Mary, the younger cousin of Elizabeth, learned also through an angelic vision that she would become pregnant, though a virgin, unmarried, and that she would bear a son who would, in today's lingo, be a spiritual rock star. And Mary said, how can this be? How can this be? I have often noted about Mary that she is better remembered, or let's say more often remembered, for her acceptance of God's bizarre promises. Be it unto me according to thy word. But I wonder if her first query is not absolutely as important to be remembered. How can this be? She wonders. So while she is wondering and finding herself with child, she takes off across the hill country to visit her cousin Elizabeth. Now, apparently, she goes alone, or at least no escort is recorded. So what is she thinking of? Heads off into the hills. In those days, Mary and Elizabeth attributed startling phenomena to God, the God of reversals, the God of Mary's Magnificat, the God who flips the social order. Both women are great with child, and they are in extremely vulnerable circumstances, and both of them find stamina and courage enough to carry on. In those days. In these days, many women wonder, how can this be? Mary found courage from the God within her own flesh, as did Elizabeth. In these days, too, many poor women agonize about their survival, their resources, their children. Many die alone. Many feel abandoned by society, and they wonder, how can this be? Many pray, and many reject the idea of God altogether. Privileged and moneyed women have options, and still they often wonder, how can all this be? So, you know, we have our biblical stories and we have our own stories. What is your own story? How have you wondered? And how have you found courage and strength to go on? Every individual approaches such things differently. Some ignore, some deny, some reason it out alone, some read, or these days go online with keywords. Some may get depressed, call mom and dad, get therapy, meditate, do yoga, talk to a spouse. Some weep, others rage, some rejoice, and many pray. Luke, the third gospel, is written about 30 years after the events surrounding Mary and Elizabeth and their two angelically envisioned sons. Luke we think of often as the personal physician of Paul the Apostle. That's a good one, isn't it? A Freudian slip, perhaps. Paul the Impossible Apostle. But such identity for Luke is a little bit doubtful, according to scholars, because Luke hailed from Antioch of Syria. He was extensively familiar with Jewish tradition, and he never once mentioned that Paul wrote letters. If he were Paul's personal accompanying physician, would he not have noted that Paul was frantically writing letters? I cannot help but add here that Jesus spoke Syriac Aramaic and that Syria played a major role in ancient writings. Luke was from Syria. In ancient writings, geography, and development of the Jesus tradition. To say this in these days breaks my heart. So there you have a little history, a little theology, a little doctrinal hinting at incarnation. Still, none of these alone will captivate the imagination, nourish the soul, encourage wonder, heal, inspire the courage that this life demands, this life with all its odd and unexpected, difficult, tragic and miraculous things. Some good, some not so good, some no fault. So very often we are rendered stunned, confused, wondering, just like our forebears, how can this be? Where is God? How will I cope? To address all these things, we need a heroic story. A story with vivid details. A story that will be remembered and told over and over and over again. A story replete with memories. A story that has rituals attached. A story we cannot really understand, and yet we cannot dismiss. How can this be? A story that makes us wonder. A story of the God of reversals. Now, Luke has an idea, perhaps a little delusional, that he will be able to persuade the Gentile population, that is, everyone who isn't Jewish, that they should be included and come into this grand vision of divine salvation. To persuade outsiders, you of course need a brilliant story, an amazing hook, one that will make people wonder, how can this be? And they want to know more. He chooses, among other things, the Visitation. The story of Mary and Elizabeth, which we just sang about. And it is unusual for a few reasons. One, it tells the Christmas story from before the Christmas story actually happens, and from the point of view of women. That's quite intriguing, quite unusual in those days and in these days. John the Baptist wondered also, and he jumped into action. He's an action figure. He felt himself called, probably by his having grown up in a clergy family, that he should be a prophet, a messenger, one who encouraged wondering and baptism, sometimes very forcefully and sometimes a little nastily, John the Baptist. He was a figure. But Mary and Elizabeth, they also are open and receptive to the pulse of God thrumming in their hearts and their flesh. And they wondered, how can this be? But what they did was they sought each other out, even taking some risks to do so. They needed each other. Women in those days and in these days consistently need women friends. Women friends to talk when something beyond all reason and expectation happens. How can this be? I am not saying that men don't do this, but I am saying for women, it is, I find, almost a necessity. I recently talked with a woman who simply could not understand how God made painful things happen to good people. But she simultaneously believed that God wouldn't do that. How could this be? But talking with another woman helped. They didn't come up with any secure answers. But because they shared and they laughed and they told each other their stories and they somehow processed this, how can this be feeling, through their stories. You know that 12-step groups of recovery from any kind of addiction or compulsion, those meetings depend entirely on stories. People tell their stories, some of them horror stories, but other people listen, and they grow together and they get well. Myself, I call my women friends right away, no matter what happens. Whether they believe in God or not, or whether they have the same experiences, they listen and they love me. And I do the same with them. We do that as Mary and Elizabeth did, all of us, and we wonder together. I also wonder with God, but let me tell you, women friends are better. They're not invisible and they talk. And they talk and talk and talk and talk and they listen and listen and listen. As I began by saying, children are probably the most expert of wanderers. They never cease from wondering. So I want to end with a small anecdote about wondering and its gifts. I heard this very recently from a good friend, it's a true story, who I have dubbed a stealth evangelist, a stealth evangelist. She's in California now, visiting her son and his wife and their two sons, her grandchildren. The oldest of the kids, the children's named Jack. Jack is just 6, and he loves it when Grandma comes and reads him stories. His parents read him stories, but Grandma adds something to it, because after the story, they wonder together about the story, and they have a conversation. And Jack likes that part when Grandma comes. Grandma told me that many times she has read a book to Jack, a book by Eaton Boritzer called What is God? What is God? The book illustrates in words and drawings the basics of many world religions, Christianity among them. All asking, how can this be, and what is God? All of them conclude the same way, that God is love. The Christian one, as does every religion, has a founder, a figure that people followed, a leader. Great leaders make followers. They also make other leaders. So Jack knows that he is a Christian, but his parents, their lifestyle, they're too busy, they don't go to church. But he knows he's a Christian, and he knows he's been baptized, and he wonders about Jesus, his founder. He's curious. So of course it's Christmas now, and Grandma decides that it's time that Jack know something else. So she tells Jack, you know, Jack, Christmas is when we celebrate Jesus's birthday. Jesus was born at Christmas. And Jack says, no. No, are you kidding? No. How can this be? So Jack now is on wonder overload, and Grandma is very eager and empowered. So together they are reading the Gospel of Luke, especially chapter 2. Jack has many more wonderings, chiefly about mangers and angels. But what Jack says is, read it again, Grandma. Read it again, Grandma. Amen.